The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now we're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we intended to talk about rock pools last week. We didn't have time, but we want to talk about what you can find in your rock pools on the beach.
Exactly. With so many of us staycationing now, these are kind of the wonders around our coast. And we have rock pools. We have such a big coastline. We have rock pools everywhere. So I thought it would be interesting to talk about some of the things that you might expect to find, a little bit more about them, and some things maybe you don't. And one of the first things is a mermaid. Purse, and some people might have heard of this. It looks like a little leathery square that fits in the palm of your hand with little tendrils coming out of each corner. And in fact, that is a shark's egg. And about 40% of sharks lay eggs. And we have over 70 species of shark in Ireland. But what normally a mermaid's purse is the egg of what most people call a dogfish.
Okay.
Now, a dogfish is a long spotted fish. They're pretty common. In typical Irish terms, they're not a dogfish at all. They're actually a cat shark. So okay. This is the egg of the cat shark. So particularly after a storm, if you're down rock pooling, you might find the egg of a cat shark.
I would expect to find crabs in a rock pool because, you know, tiny little creatures.
You would. And often the most common, the shore crab, the little green crab that you'll see going around. But actually, we also have hermit crabs in Ireland. And we have a really interesting little crab called the velvet swimming crab that has flattened back legs that are like little paddles. And we even have spider crabs, although you probably wouldn't find them in a rock pool.
Now, do crabs always walk sideways?
Actually, they don't. But Pat, they have very stiff joints and that's why they choose to walk sideways most of the time. They sort of shuffle along. But if you creep up on them or if they're fighting, they can actually go in any direction.
OK, so it's just for comfort they
just
go sideways.
Comfort, exactly.
Now, a starfish, what is that?
Well, a starfish, as it sounds, is this amazing creature shaped like a star with lots of different legs, different numbers depending on the species. And if you look closely at a starfish in a rock pool, you may actually be able to see it move. They move very slowly on hundreds of little tube-like feet, but they're fascinating creatures. Their stomach, they can eject it out of their mouth in the centre, engulf something in their stomach and bring it back in. If they lose a leg, they can regrow it, although it'll probably take them months, so it's not something they would like to happen. And incredibly, they have no blood and they actually use seawater to pump nutrients around their body. So they're an incredible little creature and there's all different kinds of them in the rock pools around Ireland.
Sea anemones.
Well, we're all talking about the jellyfish at the moment. There's plenty of them out there if you're a sea swimmer. But the sea anemone is a relative of the jellyfish. It's a little blob of jelly, but they can sting. They have little tentacles. And when they're submerged underwater, the tentacles come out. They can sting small things swimming by and use them to feed. And you might see these as rather insignificant little things. They're purple or orange blobs of jelly. But actually, some species of these can live for 50 years. So we're sharing the planet with them for much of our time.
Finally, anything edible in a rock pool?
Well, around a rock pool, seaweed. I mean, most seaweed is edible, actually, and certainly around Ireland. So you can find things like dulse or dillisk if you're out there and you're brave enough to try it if you haven't. And actually a little seawater plant around rock pools, rock samphire. So rather than going to the deli, you might be able to pick it yourself.
Now, you want to talk about climate change and its impact on gestation and fertility.
Well, this is some research that was done in South Africa recently, which sparked this topic for me. And it's about the yellow-billed hornbill. And anyone's been to Dublin Zoo will see we have an Abyssinian hornbill there. It's a big bird with a big long beak. And anyone who's watched The Lion King will know Zazu. He's a red-billed hornbill. These birds are the yellow-billed hornbill, sometimes called flying bananas because their bill is like a big long banana. And researchers in South Africa have been studying them for the last 10 years. And what they found is a dramatic drop in the number of successful gestations and chicks born. So in the first 3 years that they monitored them, nearly 60% of pairs managed to have a successful birth of a chick. In the last 3 years, it's only 17% of those.
And so why?
So temperature is the issue. And this is part of the global trend around increasing temperatures. And in fact, they found when the temperature got over 35.7, which is kind of around the temperature at sustained levels life can survive at, there was no chicks at all. And of course, it makes sense. Birds, their eggs are outside in the environment. They're going to be particularly sensitive to climate change. And that's what we're seeing all over the world. So in Australia, in the US, we're seeing nesting times and seasons being disrupted. And, you know, we've talked a few times about birds being a very good bellwether because they are this species that has this unique sort of lifestyle.
So before the egg can develop into a chick, you're basically going to get a boiled egg.
Well, I mean, you can understand how eggs are particularly sensitive. And in fact, some reptiles are also obviously lay eggs, things like turtles and crocodiles. And, you know, those have another interesting quirk, which is that the temperature at which the egg is gestated can determine the sex of the offspring. So in some species, high temperatures produce male babies, and in some species, high temperatures produce female babies. But obviously, if the temperature changes quickly from the way the species has evolved, yeah, we could end up with far more females or far more males, and that could make populations much more vulnerable to extinction.
Now, what about humans and the effect of temperature on gestation?
Yeah, and we're not immune either, Pat. And anyone who's been pregnant in hot temperatures will know it's pretty miserable. But certainly in very high temperatures, such as we saw in places like India and Pakistan, we are seeing far more issues with premature birth, with stillbirths. And obviously for women in the global south, it's particularly acute. They're often cooking over open stoves. They don't have air conditioning in a lot of places. So, you know, I think it's something we're seeing in other animals,
yeah,
but we need to start thinking about it for ourselves.
You would imagine that, you know, the blood adjusts the body temperature. And, you know, when you take your temperature, whether it's a cold winter's day or a hot summer's day, it tends to be around the same. But obviously, if you're in extremis, if the temperature is too high, your bloodstream is struggling to keep your temperature at the appropriate level for baby.
That's exactly right. And scientists use a measure called the wet bulb temperature, which is actually when you wrap a wet cloth around a thermometer. Obviously, you would think that would cool it. But in high humidity, actually, the water can't evaporate. And that's another issue in these climates. The body can't cool itself. The sweat, you know, you can't sweat effectively. And there are temperatures where we just, our normal physiological processes can't happen. And I suppose reproduction is such an incredible, finely balanced biological process. It's not surprising that it's perhaps one of the first signs of humans not being able to survive in high temperatures.
Mm. And some of the temperatures, you were telling me that in Pakistan, there was one place where the temperature reached 51 degrees.
51, but that's shocking. But Pat, in Portugal, 47. I mean, that's a place where a lot of us have been and would be shocked to see those kind of temperatures. And look, we were all a bit shocked, I think, by London at 40. Now, that they were only momentary, but I think that the frequency of these is going to increase. We never anticipated that this would happen so quickly. Climate scientists had predicted these kind of temperatures would be decades
and
in the future.
And often in challenged parts of the world, the developing world, some of the housing has corrugated iron on the roof, and that just becomes an oven.
Absolutely. And some of the things that people are looking at in Pakistan, they're looking at specific interventions for women, changing the roofs, giving them doctor's appointments early in the morning, trying to give them closed cooking stoves. So certainly we've talked about women will bear the brunt of climate change in the global south. We will need specific initiatives to help them.
Dr. Ruth Riemann, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.